Let's begin today by a quick review of the prophetic implications of the study we've been doing regarding the rededication of the temple by Judas Maccabee in December of 164 BC. Book of Daniel predicted that there would be an abomination of desolation carried out by a very wicked ruler of the Greeks, and that after a period of time, righteous people, heroes, would rededicate the temple and get things restarted again. So we know that when Antiochus IV came to power, he had a problem with religious Judaism. And eventually that took the form of him declaring it completely illegal. It appears as if that happened on the first day of the eighth Jewish month in the year 167. The following month, he had sent some of his representatives to rededicate the temple of the Jews, which was no longer being used, to Zeus. And on the 25th day of the ninth month, to offer a sacrifice to Zeus in the form of a pig. And so that is the abomination of desolation that took place on the 7th of December, 17th of December of 167 BC, the 25th day of the ninth Jewish month. Judas Maccabee's family was resistant to all of these attempts to eradicate the Jewish faith, and they became guerrilla fighters defending the faith. Until finally, 3 years later, Judas, I think knowing that he was a prophetic player, seized control of the Temple Mount, and starting on the 25th day of the ninth month, which in that year would have fallen on the 14th day of December, began the 8-day rededication process until everything was back up and running the way it was supposed to be. So that's all happening in December of 164. Because of the joy of this fulfillment of prophecy and the saving of the faith, Hanukkah becomes the next new holiday of the Jewish people. The last new holiday was Purim during the time of Esther, which also dealt with saving the Jewish faith. This holiday continues to be celebrated to this very day amongst Jewish people. And one of its symbols, very well known, is usually thought of as a candelabra that has 8 lights on it plus a 9th central light. And I want to talk a little bit today about some of the teachings of modern Jews regarding Hanukkah that I believe are not accurate whenever we look at the historical information. So let me read to you from the Talmud of the Jews. This is the Gemara portion of the Talmud, Tractate Shabbat 21b, which was written after AD 500, so well after the establishment of Christianity, and long after the events of the 2nd century BC. And this is the quote. What is the reason of Hanukkah? For our rabbis taught on the 25th of Kislew, commence the days of Hanukkah, which are 8 on which a lamentation for the dead and fasting are forbidden. For when the Greeks entered the temple, they defiled all the oils therein, and when the Hasmonean dynasty prevailed against and defeated them, They made search and found only one cruse of oil which lay with the seal of the high priest, which contained sufficient for one day's lighting only. Yet a miracle was wrought therein, and they lit the lamp therein for 8 days. The following year, these days were appointed a festival with the recital of Hallel and Thanksgiving. End quote. And so it is widely taught among religious Jews and even traditional Jews that the reason for the 8 days of Hanukkah is because God gave miraculous oil for the lights for 8 days in the years in the days of Judas Maccabee. Now, when you go to the books of the Maccabees, which we've been looking at a lot, they know nothing of this miracle. When you go to Josephus and look, there is nothing of this miracle of lights. The only real reason for the 8 days given is that that's the normal period used to dedicate the temple. You see it in dedicating the tabernacle, 8 days. You see it in dedicating Solomon's temple, 8 days. You see it in dedicating the temple rebuilt by Zerubbabel, 8 days. And so when Judas Maccabee rededicated the temple, he took the 8 days. And so that seems to be the better reason why there's eight lights that are associated with the rededication of the temple. Now, why is it called the Festival of Lights then, sometimes? And that actually does go back to the time of the first century and before. Josephus mentions it. But it is interesting that when directing his attention specifically to that question, why is it called the Festival of Lights? This is his answer. This is from Antiquities, Book 12, subsection 325. From that time to this, we celebrate this festival and call it Lights. I suppose the reason was because this liberty beyond our hopes appeared to us, and that thence was the name given to that festival. End quote. So I'm fairly confident that this idea of the miraculous oil supply is a more modern Jewish legend and does not have any basis in the legitimate historical information that we have about Hanukkah. And the real reason I bring that up is because I don't trust the rabbinical writings known as the Talmud. I know a lot of Christians do. They use it for background material. I refuse to, because I have found too many places like this where it is suspect because it comes into direct conflict and even direct contradiction sometimes with information we have from much more trustworthy and closer in time sources. Well, when the temple was rededicated in December of 164, that wasn't the end of the problems. The war continued to go on because there were all sorts of both Jew and Greeks that didn't like the fact that Judas was resisting the command of the king to Hellenize and to become more like everybody else in his kingdom. And throughout the rest of that winter of 64 into 63, and then into the beginning of 63, he kept fighting and winning many, many battles against those that were trying to Hellenize the Jewish people and wipe out the unique Jewish faith. Eventually, Antiochus IV was informed about all this stuff that had happened. Now, he had left the region of Antioch and had gone up into Mesopotamia and then over into Persia because he was always under pressure to get together enough money to pay the treaty demands of Apamea, the war reparations that his father had agreed to back in 188. And so he'd taken off into those regions in order to try to forcibly collect tribute money and any extra amount of treasure that he could put his hands on. And he was actually retreating back toward Babylon from Persepolis, where he tried to plunder a temple there and was rebuffed whenever he heard about Judas taking the temple back over again. And this is what 2 Maccabees chapter 9, starting at verse 4, tells us. It says, "Transported with rage, he conceived the idea of turning upon the Jews the injury done by those who had put him to flight. And so he ordered his charioteer to drive without stopping until he completed the journey." So he's up in Mesopotamia, finds out that his forces have been defeated repeatedly and that the temple's been taken back over and rededicated to the Jewish religion. And so he figures, if you want something done right, you got to do it yourself. And so he tells his chariot driver, "Don't spare the horses, don't stop for anything, get to Jerusalem." Continuing, "For in his arrogance, he said, 'When I get there, I will make Jerusalem a cemetery of Jews.'" So his plan now was to annihilate personally all of the religious Jews that were there. Continuing with 2 Maccabees. Remember, 2 Maccabees written by a person very much convinced that God's hand was involved in all of these things. "But the all-seeing Lord, the God of Israel, struck him with an incurable and invisible blow. As soon as he stopped speaking, he was seized with a pain in his bowels, for which there was no relief, and with sharp internal tortures, and that very justly, for he had tortured the bowels of others with many and strange inflictions." So, according to the Maccabee writer, the moment he made this declaration that he was going to annihilate the religious Jews, he started feeling all this pain in his gut. But that didn't stop him from still trying to make the trip. Continuing, "Yet he did not in any way stop his insolence, but was even more filled with arrogance, breathing fire in all his rage against the Jews and giving orders to drive even faster. And so it came about that he fell out of his chariot as it was rushing along, and the fall was so hard as to torture every limb in his body." So you got to picture this in your mind. He is having his charioteer driver drive as fast and furious as he can, and it must have hit a big bump and bounced Antiochus right out of the chariot onto the ground. Now, chariots, you know, they're not going to be high-powered vehicles like we think today, but it could still have been going along, you know, 20 or 25 miles an hour and when he fell out. And so he is definitely dinged up big time. Probably ended up with all sorts of internal injuries. We don't know exactly what was causing other than divine intervention, his initial bowel pain, but it's possible that he'd already developed appendicitis. And maybe this just made things worse. And so it says, "Thus he who only a little while before had thought in his superhuman arrogance that he could command the waves of the sea and had imagined that he could weigh the high mountains in a balance was brought down to earth and carried in a litter, making the power of God manifest to all." So this guy was full of himself. Remember, he put on his coins a title, Antiochus Epiphanes, which is the idea of brilliance, you know, very bright in light and smartness. It was godlike. So he thought of himself as a god. And so now here, the irony is not lost to the writer of 2 Maccabees, that this guy that thought he was God is now laying on a stretcher, a broken man. And so the ungodly man's body swarmed with worms, maggots, and while he was still living in anguish and pain, his flesh rotted away, and because of the stench, the whole army felt revulsion at his decay. And because of his intolerable stench, no one was able to carry the man who a little while before had thought that he could touch the stars of heaven. Now, that's an interesting line, because in Daniel chapter 8, verse number 11, a prophecy many hundreds of years before about this guy had predicted that he would take on the stars of heaven. So maybe the writer of 2 Maccabees is alluding to Daniel 8, 9. Back to the passage. Then it was that, broken in spirit, he began to lose much of his arrogance and came to his senses under the scourge of God, for he was tortured with pain every moment. And when he could not endure his own stench, he uttered these words, "It is right to be subject to God. Mortals should not think that they are equal to God." Now, how much of this is accurate, we don't know. But it is certainly psychologically understandable that a man of his time period, his background, having these things happen to him, these reversals of his fortune, could have been identified as by him as the punishment of God upon him for what he'd done to the Jewish people. In 1 Maccabees 6, 9 and following, which reports on this same event, it expands on this idea that he was somewhat sorry that he'd made this mess of things and brought himself to an early end. This is the quote. "He lay there for many days because deep disappointment continually gripped him, and he realized that he was dying. So he called all his friends and said to them, 'Sleep has departed from my eyes, and I am downhearted with worry. I said to myself, to what distress I've come, into what a great flood I'm now plunged, for I was kind and beloved in my power.'" Now, that's not true, but he's self-deluded. "But now I remember the wrong I did in Jerusalem. I seized all its vessels of silver and gold, and I sent to destroy the inhabitants of Judah without good reason. I know that it is because of this that these misfortunes have come upon me. Here I am, perishing of bitter disappointment in a strange land." And then he called for Philip, one of his friends, and made him ruler over all his kingdom. He gave him the crown and the robe and the signet so that he might guide his son Antiochus, this would be Antiochus the V, and bring him up to be king. And thus King Antiochus died there in the 149th year. And so that happens probably the winter of 164 going into 163. Now, this also is important, I think, in understanding a prophetic passage in the book of Daniel that we've already looked at. I want you to go there again. Daniel chapter 12, verse number 11 is where we've already read. Let me start with that. "From that time that the regular burnt offering is taken away, and the abomination that makes desolate is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Now, we know that from the day that the abominable sacrifice was made, the 25th day of the ninth month in the year 167, until Judas began his cleansing, his dedication, his rededication of the temple on the 25th day of the ninth month in 164, that's 1,290 days. So that's prophetically fulfilled. But look at verse 12. Blessed is he who waits and arrives at the 1,335 days. Now, what's that about? And I'm going to suggest to you that that's the death date of Antiochus IV. Because the timing of his death is right around that sequence. That date is rendered as the 10th day of the 11th month of the Jewish year, or 27 January of 163. And we know that Antiochus died sometime in January, maybe February at the latest, because by the time March rolls around, he is clearly dead, and his son, Antiochus V, is now the ruler of the Macedonian kingdom of Syria, including the land of Israel. And we know this because there are several letters. And it is interesting that those letters seem to follow up initially on this idea that Antiochus was sorry that he'd caused all this trouble for the Jewish faith and wanted it to be reinstituted appropriately. So let me read to you from these official letters that have been copied into 2 Maccabees, chapter number 11, starting at verse number 16. And all of these letters take on the forms of that time period letters, so they look very legit, as if they were copied out of official documentation. And there are dates given to them that are tied in with the Seleucid calendar system, and I will tell you what the equivalent modern-day calendar system date is when I get to those. So, first letter. The letter written to the Jews by Lysias was to this effect. Lysias to the people of the Jews, greetings. John and Absalom, who were sent by you, have delivered your signed communication and have asked about the matters indicated in it. I have informed the king of everything that needed to be brought before him, and he has agreed to what was possible. If you will maintain your goodwill toward the government, I will endeavor in the future to help promote your welfare. And concerning such matters and their details, I've ordered these men and my representatives to confer with you. Farewell. The 148th year, Dies Corinthians, 24th. Now that becomes the 10th of April, 163 BC. So we know when that letter was written, and it appears to be correspondence regarding a ceasefire peace treaty request by the Jews toward the new king. That is Antiochus V. And so he seems to be amicable to that, according to his representative. Now we get to the actual king's letter. The king's letter ran thus. King Antiochus to his brother Lysias, greetings. So the guy that wrote the previous letter. Now that our father has gone on to the gods, so that means Antiochus is dead. Antiochus IV. We desire that the subjects of the kingdom be undisturbed in caring for their own affairs. We have heard that the Jews do not consent to our father's change to Greek customs, but prefer their own way of living and ask that their own customs be allowed them. Accordingly, since we choose that this nation should also be free from disturbance, our decision is that their temple be restored to them and that they shall live according to the customs of their ancestors. You will do well, therefore, to send word to them and give them pledges of friendship so that they may know our policy and be of good cheer and go on happily in the conduct of their own affairs. So there is King Antiochus V saying, I want there to be a reinstatement of the Jewish faith. They can go back to living the way they were. Here's another letter. To the nation, the king's letter was as follows. King Antiochus to the Senate of the Jews and to the other Jews, greetings. The Senate of the Jews is always the Sanhedrin. If you are well, It is as we desire. We are also in good health. Menelaus, that's the high priest appointed by Antiochus, has informed us that you wish to return home and look after your own affairs. Therefore, those who go home by the 30th of Xanthicus, that's the first Jewish month, will have our pledge of friendship and full permission for the Jews to enjoy their own food and laws just as formerly, and none of them shall be molested in any way for what they have done in ignorance. And I have also sent Menelaus to encourage you. Farewell, the 148th year, Xanthicus 15th. So that comes to the date of, 30 April 163 BC. And so you can tell from that, he basically says, all right, everyone can go home, amnesty to everyone. You can go back to your way of doing things, and we're going to just move forward. And then one last letter before we close up today, and then we'll get back to this, how this doesn't quite turn out the way we'd hoped tomorrow. So the Romans also sent the Jews a letter, which read thus, Quintus Memnius and Titus Menius, envoys of the Romans, to the people of the Jews, greetings. With regard to what Lysias, the kinsman of the king, has granted you, we also give consent. Because remember, the Greeks had to report treaty things to the Romans. So now they know. But as to the matters that he decided are to be referred to the king, as soon as you have considered them, and send someone promptly so that we may send proposals appropriate for you. For we are on our way to Antioch. Therefore make haste and send messengers so that we may have your judgments. Farewell, the 148th year, Xanthicus 15th. And so that's also the 30th of April. So the Romans have an interest in this peace between the Jews and the Macedonian Greeks. And they wish the Jews well, which is why the Jews will reach out to them as allies. Whenever the Greeks refuse to let go of all their hard feelings for the last few years of war.